Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, Hannah, join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Yugi, you can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshoe.com. Social call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call. And of course, if you want to, you can also listen to us on twitch.tv. Co-broadcast on twitch.tv, so just go there around the same time, which is around 9:30. I show up a tiny bit late just to make sure everyone's there. You know, it's like 9:35, so. But anyway, so just be patient. I'll be there. Trust me. To find me there, just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, reach me via Twitter. My account there, it's sfuoncall. And I have a personal account called Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, for those of you who've been listening to a while, you know this one, which is, I am proud to be both a Catholic, an O's fan, and also I love technology. So if any of those bother you, don't follow me. And, of course, I have my tertiary account, the one that I use for my Franz Games, and that is, oh, shocker, Franz Games. So if you want to, you can follow that and hear about the latest changes to the client. And also, of course, the latest things happening on Starfleet Warlord. And, of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week, and that is that they have new miniatures because, guess what? It's the first week of the month. So what came out was the Rodman Spurhawk B Carrier, Firehawk B Carrier, Firehawk M Heavy Escort Cruiser, the Zindi War Destroyer Scout, and X-Ship, the Heavy War Destroyer, the Wind's Great White Shark X-Cruiser, and the Paravian's Raid Mothership. When it comes to the tournaments, well, there's no tournaments currently being run on SFB Online just because we just completed ours, the last one last week, which already gave the results, which was with Justin Reuter winning that one. When it comes to the FedCom library, I hate to tell you this, but I was kind of busy with other things on the holiday weekend, so I didn't get a chance to actually work on that. So I will be doubling that up this upcoming weekend, so I will put out there more ships so that everyone can enjoy them. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the only old Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's just me. So I hope that you will enjoy this wonderful discussion. Well, at least me talking about it, which, and if I am fortunate, people in the chat room will be able to respond to different things, especially if Chris shows up. Because he emailed me about the topic which I brought up, which was, if I was ADB, you know, one of the things I would do is go retro when it comes to SFB, go retro, go back to the simpler version, the one that people picked out of their pocket and put it down, you know, and go from there. So what I plan on doing is actually going over Starfleet Battles Designer's Edition. It's actually quite interesting. If you read through this version, it's initially I thought like, wow, they removed a lot of rules. And then I realized I missed the last five pages. That's a big difference. It made a big difference in that I read was up to page 21. Page 21 is all, it's just a basic game. It doesn't have the, what's called the advanced rules, and Lord knows. I'm thinking about when I initially learned the game of Starfleet Battles. This was back in the Commander's Edition. The Commander's Edition had actually the same idea as the Designer's Edition, in that they had some rules which were marked basic, and then there were other rules which were marked advanced. Now, in the case of the Designer's Edition, what they did actually is they actually, it's the rules numbers are a little different. You know, they're numerical. They're completely numerical, which makes things a little bit harder to reference. And if you need to add rules, it messes up numbers. It's just, it's goofy. And obviously that's why ADB changed the way they did it in the Commander's Edition. That's when they actually had letters and numbers, letters denoting what section, was it combat? Was it movement? Was it systems? Was it weapons? You know, all these things, all divided up. So, all the numbers. And then if you go down to, I'm pretty sure I got it right. Let me think. I think it was page 35. Nope, not page 35, because that's, I know what this is. And that's definitely not page 35. Here it is. The advanced rules. And actually, before the advanced rules, the one thing I was looking through, and I skipped through some, which was there are a lot of optional rules, which is fine. You know, and that's always a good thing. You know, one of the things that actually is optional, and as Chris pointed out, emergency deceleration. The only empire that could use emergency deceleration was the Federation. It's like, wow. I'm sorry. Hello. I'm sorry. If I was a player that was playing against the Federation, I'd say, no, we are not using that optional rule. Because it makes the Federation, that ship, more flexible and therefore more powerful. So, you know, you could call for emergency deceleration and you get to stop in the middle of the turn. Now, but a couple things I missed, you know, when it comes to advanced rules, there's mass-based movement. And then there's, of course, they added free movement. This pre-plotted movement is nuts, but I'll get to that in a little later on, because I want to just go through some of the things that, you know, okay, I can skip some of the stuff. Now, the biggest change for anyone who's played Starfleet Battles in the modern, I like to say modern era, but I'm going to say as of probably the Commander's Edition. I don't remember everything about the Commander's Edition, but I know the Captain's Edition definitely, which was back in, I think, 89 or 90 is when it came out. So it's been a while. So, first thing I noticed here, okay, here's the sequence of play for those of you who are watching the video, you know, you can see it. But for those who are not, I'll run through it real quick. First step, standard step, energy allocation. Okay, fine. Next step, speed determination. That's fine. That's normal. You know, we announce our speeds. Self-destruction phase, I think that's normal. How many of us have actually self-destructed? I mean, really. Even in campaign battles, I don't know how many people have actually done self-destruction. The only time I've ever seen self-destruction actually used in combat is in a fleet-style combat where basically you got a ship that's almost completely dead. So what do? You self-destruct. Boom. And you try to inflict as much damage as possible to the opponent if the opponent is close by. Now, here's the really, in my mind, really interesting part. Because, actually, I have to look at some of the rules here. Because there's one thing I just thought about, but I'll express it in just a moment, which is, okay, phase four, see, the sequence of play is drone and shuttle launch phase. So at the very beginning of turn, you launch your drones and you launch and you do your shuttlecraft. Now, this actually, you know, which is interesting because of, remember, in this game, during the energy allocation phase, what you're doing is not just allocating your energy, you're also pre-plotting your movement for the whole turn, which is, to say the very least, disconcerting. I like the idea for the most part. The only part that kind of scares me about that is that you have to do it for 32 impulses. You have to plot your all your movement for the next 32 impulses. Now, that's not a bad one. I'll show you. There's one called pre-plotted movement in the advanced rules, which is worse. It's like, wow, are you kidding me? But anyway, moving onward. After you have sensor lock on, big deal. Then the impulse procedure, which basically in the impulse procedure, the segments are movement determination, movement segment, fire decision, fire announcement, fire segment, damage assessment, and that's it. And you repeat that for all of the impulses. So during the impulses, you've got two things you can do, basically. You can move, you can fire. That's it. There is nothing else. And lastly, step seven, plasma torpedo launch. And then you do some record-keeping phase at the very end. Now, anyone who's played Starfleet Battles for a long enough period of time just looks at that and just totally freaks out, you know, because of what you're telling me is like your opponent gets to launch his drones and you might be pre-plotted movement, which is going to head right towards those drones. So when you pre-plot, you have to guess when your opponent might launch that, you know, okay, this turn, he's going to launch his drones. Now, of course, here's the one thing that I look at and go, you know what? Some of this stuff is really changes the dynamic of SFB tremendously by just the change in sequence of play. And that is that if you have the sequence of play, what does that mean? Well, as the drones are very slow, they fly at speed 8, which most people go, just laugh at them. That's so for the most part, if you're flying at a certain rate of speed, you don't have to worry about the drones. But since this, remember, this is pre-plotted movement, and your only reaction to drones is one thing. The only reaction to drones is to, one thing I got to look into, which is, I just remember that they had the tractors in the advanced game, advanced rules, but I don't remember if in the advanced rules, if where they put tractoring and transports and all that, do they add that to the impulse procedure or do they add that as a separate step in the sequence of play? Because it could be either. And that's why originally I was looking for that just a little while ago. I was going, okay, wait a minute. Okay, did they change the sequence of play at all? And to me, it looks like they didn't. They said, I don't see an updated sequence of play for advanced game. And I'm sure Chris will say, there is one, in the old, or if I'm wrong, I'm assuming Chris will correct me. But anyway, so that means if you're coming in on somebody, okay, so the tractors and transports are part of the impulse procedure. Okay, so they do add it to the impulse procedure. Okay, thank you. Chris is in the chat room, so if you join me, go to twitch.tv and you will to join Chris and Iggy and Dave. They're usually there, so, and I'm always there when I do this cold broadcast. So, but anyway, let's move back to the beginning rules. So, given all through that, your drones are going speed a max speed 8. Your plasma torpedoes, as Chris pointed out to me, the Romulans go speed 32. The Gorns go speed 20, which was interesting, but okay. Why not? Because remember one thing about the Romulans. The Romulans also have one of the only sub-light ships. They have the Warbird. And that what that has is it's sublight, so it goes one hex per turn. Impulse 32. It goes, boop. You move it. Or you don't move it. For all I know, you're tacking and you're going boop, and it changes direction. But and at the end, on impulse, after impulse 32, you then can launch your plasma torpedo, which is going to go speed 32. Which, at that point, you can adjust what you're going to do for the next turn, in theory. I'll get to that later. So, to say everybody, it's very, very interesting. Oh, where's it to say it? Yeah, launch all. Okay, now. Okay, it's not the energy allocation is, for the most part, standard. It's what we've always done. We always know, which is warp impulse reactor power, batteries available, and batteries discharged. Life support, which is, 1 point, and of course, it has the whole idea of a crippled ship. Because it says here, however, if your ship is taken, whoops, I hit the Z button. If your ship, go back to, I screwed up there. Okay, here it is. Okay, if your ship is taken, internal non-shield hits equal to 50% or more of the original boxes, you may be declared the ship as on emergency life support, which requires no energy. So it still has the idea of a crippled ship when it comes to life support. Of course, the old fire, activate the fire control, which is, of course, 1 point of power. If no power is allocated into this line, the weapons may not be fired. Now, that also, I'm pretty sure the advanced rules when it comes to the Designer's Edition, they don't have the idea of passive fire control. Now, this is to me the interesting one, which is phasers. And I'll admit that when it comes to the advanced rules, the cursory glance looked for anything that just popped out at me that was changed. And I don't think phasers changed in the advanced rules. Because in the basic rules, this is what, because I don't think this would change in advanced rules because that makes no sense. This is what it says. Okay, phasers, the one unit of power for a phaser exception, of course, the type 3s and type 4s. Unless specifically stated otherwise, all ships begin all scenarios with phasers not energized. Now, anyone who's played SCV for a while knows what that means. That means basically weapon status zero. At weapon status zero, you haven't energized your phasers, which means that you have to spend one turn just warming them up, like priming the pump kind of idea. And at that point, after you warm them up, that you can then then you actually put energy into them. And here's the one that really will get some people's. Where was I? Okay. Each specific phaser may fire only once per turn, so taking account that current and presumed future position of the enemy. Okay, phaser may not be fired or energy allocated to fire them on future turns until they have been energized. This requires one turn and one unit of energy for the entire ship, unless stated otherwise. And of course, if you have not fired a phaser in the past 25 turns, then they're not energized anymore. Of course, if you haven't fired your phasers in 25 turns, you're dead probably. After they've been energized, you still must have power to fire. You may allocate this line on any given turn sufficient energy to fire all of your ship's phasers. You may allocate less, but never more. Each time a phaser fires, its energy is reduced by the amount. At the end of the turn, any unused energy, presumed phasers did not have an opportunity, may be held over to the next turn, stored in capacitors. So it still has capacitors, which is a good thing. Originally, I thought they didn't have capacitors, but they didn't. But they didn't explicitly mention them until I read that line. Of course, you got torpedoes, shields, general reinforcement, reinforcement, movement. Now, movement is pretty simple in the basic rules. That is that you get, it's a one for one. No matter what size your ship is, one for one. 1 point of energy gets you one movement. So, of course, recharge batteries, you can recharge your batteries. And there's it said, line 17, 18, and 19, these are used to allocate energy for miscellaneous systems. I specified listed examples would be ECM, ECCM, tractors, transporters, or shuttles. Because there are some things in the advanced rules that you get to do, like, suicide shuttles are available in advanced rules only. And I remember playing the basic rules. And one of the things in the basic rules that I got myself in a knot about is that when you can fly around, you got your turn mode, you got your speed, you got your turn mode and all that. But there was no high energy turns to speak of. Another thing that since I was playing the basic rules, basic rules, you have no overloading ability. And so that for like photons, if you get the rating zero, you cannot fire, which sucks dirt. Because I actually did. I got on my ship so that head to head, range zero, and neither one can fire because they're both. I think the disruptors also can't fire range zero, but I'd have to double check on the weapons chart. I forget, but I know photons definitely could not. As pointed out here, the Romulan Warbird is the only ship in the game that has no warp engines. It can never move faster than one hex per turn. Yeah. Of course, we have turn mode chart. This turn mode chart. Back in the day, back in the Commander's Edition, but before the updated SSDs, because I think let me just look at something. Do they have some of them? Yeah, I think they do. They should. Yeah, here it is. Okay. I'm going to bring this one up. This, my friends. This was the original SSDs back in the day. These were hand-drawn. Not quite hand-drawn. They had engineering, drafting tools to do the boxes. But very basic. you've got your shield, you've got your damage control, you know, your scanner and your sensor and your excess damage. You have nothing else. You don't have shuttle boxes to track your shuttles. Doesn't have, you don't see what's the turn mode, what's the BPV. You don't have any of that information. You don't even have the weapons tables on these SSDs. That was all separate. And one of the, you know, that was the old. This is old, which is the movement chart. This is the basic one. This was back in the day. Let me just for giggles. You had all the numbers, and you could see, you know, the dashes, all that. One of those great. I was gonna say advances, not really advances. Changes in the latter movement chart was that they added the gray lines. So you had white line, gray line, white line, gray line, white line, gray line. So it made things a lot easier to work with when it comes to, because you usually use a ruler to go down, bum, 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 and say, okay, your impulse one, impulse two, impulse three, and it makes it easier, because if you're not careful, you could actually put a little tilt and like the slower speeds could be going faster. Or heck, And then, of course, there's the turn mode chart here, which is how the ships and different turn modes from. Okay, this is before they actually had the letters. Later on, they actually had, these were actually letters. Like, this is like turn mode A, B, yeah, A, B, C, D, E, and F, which is heinous. As you see, F is turn mode of 8, you're going speed 30, which is incredibly bad turn mode. Okay, go back up here. We're back up to page 6. Okay, there it is. And that's the only problem with this. Problem with the rulebook, because you have to expand and contract the pages. I don't know why. I'm assuming that it depends on the size of the graphic that they put on, you know, the resolution and so forth. Okay, turn modes, of course. Here it is. Which is right here. Movement. Okay, you have a movement record is uses abbreviations as follows: 2A means 2 hexes in A direction. 3C would mean 3 hexes in direction C. So the idea is that's the way you plot a movement, is that you'd say, okay, I want to go 2A, 3C, 2B, like things like that, to plot out your whole entire turn, which anyone thinks about it, that's not easy. But I have to double check. I'm pretty sure that I read this one time. I didn't read it in this. I did not read it last when I just read this, which was earlier today. I spent the day, an hour or so reading through the rule book. And that is that I think the original reason for that was that movement, you had to plot. You know, you don't have that ability to make those split second decisions as in real life. You know, Just ask any, captain. It's like, okay, you tell them, okay, you need to turn, and they turn, of like 30 seconds later or something like that. There's a delay in that versus fire. You know, it's immediate response. You just click a button, boom, you're firing. The idea, is that, okay, impulse procedures. The only thing you can do is fire, which is the instantaneous response to a command, versus all the things that has to go on turning a ship, you know, adjusting the courses and all that kind of thing. Okay, actual movement effect on impulse procedure. Ba, ba, ba. Yeah, it talks about movement not being paralyzed. Okay, this was interesting to me, which was the procedure for disengagement. The procedure for disengagement, that's one thing I've not actually looked at. I read this and I did not know if the current rule book, how it does disengagement. If I recall correctly, you just say, I'm going to disengage, and you can basically just got to do certain things like, oh, drop all tractors and things like that. Drop tracking to your drones and miscellaneous like that. But at that point, then you just kind of hit the pedal and boom, you're gone. In the basic game, you can't do that. It might take you actually 3 turns to actually disengage. Because the example they have here is this. So basically, the procedure is, if on any given turn the starship wishes to disengage, must move at maximum possible speed what it can, as restricted by the available engine power, which may have been reduced by combat and game imposed speed limit of 31. At the end of that turn, if the starship in question has at the end of the turn, if the starship in question still has total warp power available equal to either 50% of the original power, rounding up fractions, or 15, whichever is lower, the owning player simply announced that he's disengaged. The scenario is then over unless other ships friendly to that one is left behind. The example is this. A Klingon cruiser finds itself outnumbered by 4 Zinni cruisers. The only player elects to disengage. He moves 1 turn at speed 24. This is the maximum he could reach because of the acceleration restrictions. You still have the acceleration restrictions, which is double or plus 10. And on the next turn, he accelerates further to 29, which he cannot go to 31 because he has 2 engine hits. During that turn, the Klingon ship is badly damaged and the warp energy is reduced to 15. The ship may still break off the action by disengaging, since 15 is 3% of the original 30 warp engine box. If the warp engine had been reduced to 14 or fewer factors, the Klingon could not disengage or would likely be destroyed. So that, in my mind, it's mentioned that, basically if it's out of the range of weapons of your opponent and you're moving faster than any other your opponent, you can then disengage yourself. But again, that's it. To me, I don't remember ever reading that rule in the current SFB rules. But of course, let's be honest here. How many of you have actually tried to disengage from combat? Because normally, I'm not sure how some of these campaign games are being played. Whether what they do for, I can see that I'm not going to win, and they start moving away. Versus saying like never. Do they allow, my guess is more along the lines, they're probably using the second part of that rule, which is, we're turning away, we're disengaging, we're going to be disengaging as quickly as possible. And I think the rules are a lot easier in actual SFB to disengage than they are in the original Designer's Edition rules. Right. Okay. Movement procedure doesn't matter. Stacking, of course, the unlimited stacking still held true back in the Designer's Edition. No big surprise there. Restrict fire weapon can fire once a turn. Standard stuff, when it comes to describing it, what a hit is, what damage is, and that kind of thing. Yeah, all hits are presumed to hit the shields first, and then of course you go. Then after that, you hit the armor, and then you have interior hits, and then you do damage allocation procedure, which actually has not changed since the Annals of Time. Yeah, it's standard damage allocation procedure, including the A. Given a bold result can only be scored one time in each value. For example, if three hits were scored and allocation rolled was a 12 in each case, unlikely but possible, then the three hits would be scored via auxiliary control, emergency bridge, and scanners. Which is, you know, that's... Yeah, Chris has mentioned that. Yeah, that if he's saying that he's disengaging, my opponent waves bye bye. You know, it's like good riddance. You know. Now, Chris, actually, a question I have for you in that case: what happens if your opponent has one of your ships tractored? At that point, that I assume at that point that ship gets left behind if the your opponent can maintain that tractor. And they're possibly considered destroyed. That'd be my guess. They talk about, of course, the standard firing arcs. Talks about, you know, they give an example for a shield operation. One thing, there it is. These sets are not offset. Okay. Oh, okay. I was talking about reinforcement here. And you know, you can allocate reinforcement as part of EA. You can actually use your batteries as part, you know, as normal when it comes to EA. Systems, sensors, you know, standard stuff when it comes to sensors and scanners. Oh. Where was it? Sorry. Of course, you have the lock on, the whole lock on thing when it comes to sensors. Huh. Understood. That I was thinking of a possible scenario, which is in my mind not too unlikely, where you know your opponent tractors one of your ships, and it might actually survive for a turn. They're not letting go, and then you say, I'm going to disengage, you know. But lab armor, probes, you know, standard things. Talks about phasers, the photons, standard photons procedure, you know, two and hold for one. And disruptor bolts, which are standard. This is the one, here's one of the things that's interesting. It's the plasma torpedoes. The plasma torpedoes, this is, to me, the interesting thing. Each plasma torpedo requires 2 points of energy on 2 consecutive turns. Okay, standard arming. Now, on turn 3, 5 units of energy on the third consecutive turn. This is a total of 9 points of energy. Maximum firing rate of this is one shot per tomb every 3 turns. Big surprise. The Raman ships must fire the plasma materials on the third turn. The weapon cannot be held in the launch tube. So there's no way of holding plasmas. Now, I have not looked at the Romulan plasma torpedoes. I'm guessing there are torps. Because definitely the Warbirds and the War Eagles, there are torps. There was one other ship that was Romulan that I forget what was available in this game. I'd have to look, but I know those two, they only have plasma R's. Okay, now here's the interesting part to me. That is, a Gorn ship may hold a given plasma torpedo in the launch tubes at energy cost of 2 per turn. This may go on indefinitely. Now, I don't see anywhere in this entire thing where it says that the Gorn plasma torpedoes, they have a KR. Okay. I have to look at the KR to see what kind of plasma torpedoes. I'm assuming it has the S's, or do they have the G's? But anyway, the Gorn, it looks like I'm definitely going to have to check that out, the KR, because this definitely has SSDs. The plasma for the Gorn, which Gorn is a G-torp. And for a Gorn, that means for a Gorn and for a G-torp, you're still charging 225 for a G-torp. While when it comes to normal SFB, it'd be like 223. Yeah, 223, I think. Right. I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's 223. It's been a while since I've done plasma torpedoes. So if I get it wrong, shoot me. Which means that all plasma torpedoes are the same amount of cost when it comes to the Gorn ships, the Gorn plasma torpedoes. They're only speed 20, which I can understand to a certain degree. Kind of weird, but I can understand to a certain degree. I'm assuming that this has been play tested, and it was agreeable to have them at a speed 20. Of course, you know, with movement cost one ships, when you're caught by the cruiser level, speed 20 is pretty darn fast, especially when your drones are only speed 8. And keeping up speed 20 is not an easy thing to do if you want to charge your weapons at all, you know? So, okay, I'm on. Okay. Okay. He's got me, so I gotta look to see what it is. Okay, that looks like Klingon, there's Gorn. Okay. There's the Gorn. The Gorn just has torpedoes. The mark is torpedoes, which I assume are the Gorn torpedoes. Okay. Thank you. All right, this one. Go down here, and there's the nice little Romulan torpedo. Okay, page 22. Thank you. Are you sure about that? No, I don't. Okay, let's go to Romulans. Okay, there it is. KR to convert it. Okay, so we have to convert it. The two are as plasma torpedoes. The KR uses Gorn plasma devices, plasma torpedoes, and all rules associated with them due to lack of space of the engine pod. And of course, you have the cloaking device. KR cruiser can hold the plasma torpedoes in their firing tubes. Okay, so that means that they're the 20-speed torpedoes. I'm just looking for the... Okay, that's impulsive. I'm looking for the... There it is. This. And disruptor plus... Yeah. Romulan and then Gorn. So R for Romulan, G for Gorn. Hey, who knew? I definitely didn't. Back up. Okay. Don't mind me. I'm trying to find, I think it was page 18 is where it was. No, it was not. These are optional rules. Da-da-da. Okay, yeah, this is where it was. Okay, page 13. Okay, then drones, of course, are basically missiles. Of course, this is back in the bad old days when it comes to the Klingons. And the Klingons had two drone racks, and those were called jump racks because of the actual drone racks themselves were located in the shuttle bay. So the drones would actually be launched out the shuttle bay, which is an interesting idea. And given that it only can launch one drone per turn. Yeah, of the two racks, it only could launch one drone per turn. So you have to do the whole kind of possibly slow down to move with your drone so that you can build up a wave of drones for the Klingon so that the drone was in the same location versus the Zinni. The Zinni has the four drone racks, and these are on pylons. On the pylons, because how the Zinni ship has the narrow portion, and then you have the two kind of wings, which are considered pylons, which have that's where the drones are mounted. The sensor strength of the launch ship has the effect on the number of drones that may be on the map one time. So basically, your standard this is before a lot of Zinni ships got double control. Yeah, drone move speed 8, and turn mode 1. They quote home in on the target move each their impulse in the manner so long as the move closer to the target if it is possible. If not possible to get closer to the target, they must move in such a way to get no further away from the target if possible. In my mind, that's just going okay. We think we got all the situations that we think that's not possible, but just in case. That's what I read it when it comes to that. But, normal talks about, this is the systems category, just talk about that. Okay, you got the normal shields. Describe what they are. Talks about, of course, standard stuff, which is what shield that gets hit. It looks like pretty close, if not exact, to, I think the new rules go into a little more detail about there's additional steps that you can take when it comes to figuring out what shield is actually going to be hit. In the case of the shield split rule. Then we get the optional rules. We just got through the basic rules. If you notice, there's no high energy turn. There's no tractor. There's no transporters. There's no talks of shuttles. There's no talk what's some of the other stuff that's not talked about? Well, it talks about hull and armor and that kind of thing. But most part, that's... Now, when it comes to optional rules, of course, that's the security station, then the Klingon mutiny, which is always a fun one. Then it talks about another optional rule, which is shuttlecraft. All shuttlecraft have a speed 6, turn mode 1. And there's four possible missions for shuttlecraft. One is armed shuttlecraft, because it has one little phaser 3. Research. So shuttlecraft might be launched to research a monster. In this case, they're mentioning the space amoeba scenario, which is included in the rules. Suicide attack shuttle, i.e. suicide shuttle, as we've denoted. Same, you can have, so it's up to a strength of 18. Standard stuff, which is load 3 points of energy for 3 turns. Wild Weasel, Actually, there's an optional rule that they added in for this, which is, of course, we all know about WoWs, what they're designed to do. Critical hits, which even in the latest rule book, is considered optional when it comes to WoWeasels and suicide shuttles and arm shuttles. That's not considered optional in the current rules. Critical hits is still considered optional. The whole idea of during any impulse which 12 or more hits, including shield hits, are scored against a ship, you roll for a critical hit. Roll two dice, and then if the result is two, the weapons track is knocked out. Roll 12, warp engine controls are damaged, and the ship cannot move at warp speed. However, half the power can be still available for other uses. Other result than 2 or 12 is considered a non-critical hit. So this is not even, this is critical hits. This is not even Chris, overloads are not considered an optional rule. That's different. I think actually that might be considered optional. I have to get to that part. Alternate shield rules, which is interesting idea. Instead of all hits on a given shield being scored against a shield until it's down, every fourth hit, i.e., this is a leaky shield rule, count against an interior system instead of the shield. This tends to shorten games by getting ships destroyed faster. It can also result in some interesting situations. Oh, understood, Chris. Overloads aren't in the basic rules. And even in the Commander's Edition, I haven't checked actually the latest version of the rules because I'm not sure if they still have the delineation between basic rules and advanced rules in the latest version of the rules. I've not looked at that because Lord knows how often do people actually look at all the rules for SFB. I mean, it's not like one of those things, it's not like the Bible where I read the Bible every day versus I don't think I'm not about to read the SFB rules every day. It's not my Bible. Sorry. Damage control, you can do it to repair. Of course, tractor beams. Again, you can use it. Now, the thing is about tractor beams is this. Tractor beams in the Designer's Edition, you must be at one hex range or same hex. You can't tractor like you can in the current one, which is you can tractor up to three hexes and just cost you more energy, which is nuts. So, three times the energy gets kind of expensive really fast to tractor something that much. Transporters, of course, standard range for picking up by, and also there is, it's not here, but I'm pretty sure in the advanced rules, it actually talks about boarding parties. Yeah, there it is. When using boarding parties, the one transporter can transport one boarding party referring to board party rolls and 33, which is another optional rule. Talks about boarding parties, boarding party chart. Crew unit chart. Okay, transporters work. That's, oh. Okay, that's talking about something else. Combat procedure for boarding parties. This is the one I mentioned earlier. Only, okay, emergency deceleration, which is an optional rule. Only Federation ships may use emergency decelerators to improve their maneuverability in combat situation. And it talks about the procedure, which is at any time during the turn, a player using a Federation ship may announce its intention to use emergency deceleration. The announcement is made after the movement segment of any impulse. After the movement segment of the second subsequent impulse of given which the given ship moves. Do not count impulse in which the ship in question does not itself move. Oh, wow. That's a different take on things, is it not? I don't think so. I don't think they have the Iggy, I don't think they have the positronic flywheel rules. Which is, I'm sorry. You want to talk about almost unbalancing? Not quite most unbalancing, but it's pretty high up there. Rule, optional rule ever designed. The idea that you can with the positronic flywheel, you can completely stop. And then, whoop, and gone. That, Iggy, I think it might be a Commander's Edition thing. I've not checked, and my assumption, I'm going off crisp knowing more about the Designer's Edition than I do at the moment. Of course, self-destruction. In dire circumstances, the captain of the ship goes, screw this, I'm blowing up. Wow. They have nonviolent combat, which always to me was an interesting idea. I know the idea of it, which is you want to get weapons hits. This is usually this occurs. I'm sure we've all seen this. Okay. Page 18 has it. Are you sure? Maybe I missed. Did I miss it? Oh, you're right. It's not a separate rule. It's part of the emergency deceleration rule, which the scientists in the Federation and presumably other were experimenting with the concept known as the positron flywheel effect. This method is storing movement momentum, even though it explicitly states earlier in this rule book that movement is, when it comes to warp, is not movement. You know? It's like, okay, that's not movement. If you use a starship, the science theory does have the effect of being allowed the starship to increase speed more rapidly after a temporary reduction in speed, which is nuts. But thank you, Chris, for pointing it out that it is here. It's not a separate rule. True, Iggy, it's not science. It is Star Trek, so it's all pseudoscience. Nonviolent combat, which the only time I've ever seen that is for like when you're trying to either capture a freighter, or try to capture get a hostage from opposing person's ship. I've seen it in that case, the idea being that you don't want to kill them. In the case of freighters, you don't want to destroy the precious cargo, which is what you're trying to get. When you're a pirate, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the cargo. You don't care about the ship. You care about contains the ship, of course. Big surprise. Super intelligent computers. Fun. Boon separation is also an optional rule. This one was, in my mind, an interesting one, which is auxiliary drone racks. This allows anybody to add drone racks to their ships. It says, from time to time, the various fleets depicted in the game have experimented with adding additional weapons to the ships, particularly when sending them into a specially dangerous situation. Most of these experiments have involved drones, since these weapons are easily added and do not require any power to fire and are highly effective. Some people would argue about that comment. And basically what you do is you simply draw another box or two or three onto any SSD and label a drone rack. Each rack holds 2 to 4 drones. Players may wish to consider using point defense phasers on ships not normally equipped with them, particularly engaged ships with their American. Idea is that this is, the S7 rules? I know they removed it from the rule book, but I think it was like S7. The whole idea that you could actually modify your ships, which is nuts. because the whole idea of the ships that were created was that they're somewhat realistic, you know. So, of course, another optional, which I've, so many people, it's like, yeah, ECM, ECCM is another one of those ones. Actually, this is a relatively small number of rules compared to what we're used to. ECCM, you've got at least two, maybe the three pages in the rule book going when it comes to electronic warfare. But of course, when it comes to the SFB rules, I mean the big book of SFB rules, electronic warfare talks about not just its own self-generation. It talks about learning. And yeah, I don't remember if it actually talks about special sensors. I think they might cover special sensors in the special sensors section. But still, you know, it's much larger versus this one, which is like six rules within the ECM, ECCM optional rule. You know, they says my put energy to ECCCM. The total amount of energy put into that those. Both of them cannot exceed the highest unchecked box and sensor track, usually six. Okay, in the sensor lock-on phase, that's when you announce your ECCCM strength. And in ECCM, any given ship exceeds ECCM. Yeah, okay, boom, boom. Okay, mass reduce. Okay, whoa. Let me look at this. This is interesting. If the ECCM strength for any given ship exceeds the ECCM strength of any ship, then the enemy ship must reduce his sensor rating for the current turn only by the amount that the ECCM has been exceeded by. Right. If the ECCM strength is lower than the ECCCM, then there's no effect. Identical, of course, there's no effect. In the multi-ship scenario, the players should use average ECCM and ECCCM for all ships. In such scenarios, players may wish to designate secretly one ship to have special electronics and be able to use equal to double its sensor ratings, i.e. like a scout. In these cases, players could keep ECCM and ECCM ratings a vanilla ship secret, giving the numbers, but which ship they apply to. So, works a little differently, which is instead of modifying the, basically weapons fire rules, the electronics affects lock on, which is scary. Because let's say that someone allocates six ECM and you allocate four ECCM, but only allocate two ECM. In that case, your opponent's would be reduced by two and yours would be reduced by two. And on lock-on, so it's possible that one of you will not actually have lock-on. You both have a two-thirds chance of getting lock-on, which is a high level penalty to pay. So ECCM is nasty. You know, EW is nasty in the basic rulebook, in the designer's edition, sorry. Of course, cloaking device, which is also optional. Interesting. This one that I would love, which is the nuclear space mines. They're optional, which I think they should not. I don't think they're optional in the main rule book because they're just a function of those ships. Standard stuff, and then it goes to describe some of the ships, including a command cruiser is an uprated version of standard cruiser. SSD for the CCD and CA are the same sheet with modifications made in 43.3. Which is convert, Markov, okay, to convert a command cruiser to a heavy cruiser. mark all the systems, flag bridge, auxiliary APR, and the phaser bank in the secondary hull. So basically, they give you a command cruiser and then say, okay, you got to reduce that to be an actual heavy cruiser. And this talks about the different ships. I think it was page. What was the page? Because it has all the campaign games, all this stuff. Even a sublight game. Here it is, advanced rules. Here it is. This is where it gets into mass-based movement. Basically, the whole idea is that you actually have a movement cost. So they do add that, which is fine. This one is the weird one. Okay, you got the free movement, which, of course, most people go, well, yes, I'm going to use free movement because they don't want to do all that pre-plotting of movement. But, you know, the basic game, the basic one, before you get to advanced rules, it's pre-plotted. Actually, that's one thing I did not check, because the original, when I was talking about the designer's edition, in the last podcast, I was actually thinking about the pocket edition, which is a precursor to this one. And I'm not sure if it had the advanced rules. I'm pretty sure it didn't have the advanced rules. In which case, you want to talk about quite a change. Yeah. Chris was mentioning that the D7, the D6, D7, and KR are all one SSD, which is correct. To make it cheaper to produce, I'm sure that's what ADB did. It's like, oh, just take the ship, make a photocopy, modify the SSD, just, you know, mark this off, and then you've got your ships. Okay, now this one is the nutty one, the pre-plotted movement. This is more than the initial pre-plotted movement. What I call pre-plotted movement is that at the start of the turn, part of energy allocation, you plot your movement. This is ratcheting it up to another one, which is, here how it goes. You plot the movement for each turn during the previous turn. Now, after half of the impulses, like impulse 16, have been played, this is, you know, 16, 25, or 3, depends upon which impulse chart you move. Because actually, they talk about the alternate. Thank you, Chris. I was correct. The pocket edition did not have the advanced rules. So can you imagine not having the advanced rules? Pre-plotted movement. No, that's one thing I haven't gotten to the advanced rules of this, which is the advanced rules have high energy turns. So it's like, ooh, whoa, you know. But this is, let's go through this pre-plotted movement, which I thought was kind of crazy. I'm not sure if this one is in the current rule book or not. I don't think it is, but it might be. Okay. In the middle of the turn, what you do is plot the movement and fill out the energy allocation for the next turn. So 16 impulses before, basically half a turn, before you actually finish the current turn, you're pre-allocating and pre-plotting the movement for everything you're going to be doing the next turn. Now, given that, of course, we have the kind of idea of energy balance due to damage. That is, okay, of course, it's possible that at the start of turn that there may not be sufficient energy to perform all the activities, in which case it goes through this list of what you have to remove. Okay, you go first, you remove general reinforcement, you discharge batteries, you cancel energy allocated to recharge batteries, you shut off tractor beams, you cease ECCM, you reduce the energy allocated to phasers to 3 units, reduce movement energy down to by 1/2, cancel energy used by torpedoes, bolts, or shuttles and inject them into space if required. And if this, by this point, the imbalance has not been satisfied, the owner plan must reduce the planned energy expenditures at his own discretion to restore the balance. He may not reestablish expenditures canceled in steps 1 through 8. So, again, it's like energy balance due to damage. You know, where you have to kind of do a reallocation in mid-turn. I forget exactly when that is when it comes to energy. Do you have to do it that impulse, or can you wait? I'm pretty sure it's when you get the damage, then you have to do the energy balance right after that. The damage is allocated, which is nuts. They start with advanced rules. They have the attack warps. Of course, if you're still not using one of the alternate movement methods, you still have to pre-plot it. High energy turns, of course, is standard high energy turns. Has probably a book down with that. It has, of course, the shuttlecraft, some of the advanced rules for launching and recovering. That includes using the tractor beams. Talks about the Zinni attack shells, i.e. fighters. They're called attack shuttles. Before they got crazy and started actually having fighters which had drones and disruptors and phasers and all this kind of crazy stuff. But limits some of the missions. Obviously it cannot be a suicide shuttle. But other things it may not be boarded by boarding parties. Attack shells cannot board it because it's single. And of course, big surprise, what's the first thing that happens? Drones. Drones change. They actually have faster drones, speed 12s, endurance. They even have, the Type 3 XX, 100 turn endurance, warhead of 8, speed of 8. That's when you get, remember, I'm not sure if any of you guys remember, which is the whole idea of wild boar, which are interesting. And then, of course, you have the long distance droning, the drone bombardment, where you actually can set waypoints for the drones as it comes into it like a base. But of course, they added the ability for ATG, which basically has the same ability that plasma torpedoes had. Big surprise, we all know about that. Anti-drones are there, of course. Then. Now, again, the advanced rules. Now you got overloads, both for plasma torpedo and disruptor bolts. And then they also add the Gorn swivel mounts. So instead of having the fixed mounts, now you can actually swivel them so they have a more degree of movement and therefore a greater firing arc. Of course, the booms. And big surprise, the Klingons get the UIM. Ubitron interface modules, the bane of the existence. Pirates get special rules. And then the one thing that if you saw before is these beautiful little graphics, which are what's called true firing arcs. Those extended little hexes that get added onto it for certain ships, like in this case the Federation. It's not just FA arcs, but there's like FH is what it's describing here. And then of course we have the Klingon special arcs, which is to this day I still can't quite know this quite right, but it is what it is. Talk about the Tholian web device for the Tholians, which now remember this is the web device, the web generator. This is before the whole idea of casting webs. I remember trying to use this sucker. It's not an easy thing to do because basically you have to drag your web, connect it up, which makes it a heck of a lot easier. You got to make sure that your anchor point doesn't get destroyed and the ship that's trying to lay the web does not get destroyed. Because otherwise, all that work you did, it goes out the window. This is why cast webs were a godsend for when it comes to the Tholians. And star stasis field generators. Yes, they have the stasis field generators. Of course, talk about tractors. And then it goes into some additional ones, which is just planets and asteroids and ground bases. And then goes through the different ships. But that's basically the designer's edition. Unfortunately, I didn't get to one thing I wanted to discuss. I'll go through I'll put it off for another day. Because one thing I wanted to talk about, which is the whole idea, because as I pointed out 2 weeks ago, the idea was that it might be possible, it might be just possible, that with the design, take the designer's edition rules, possibly even to start with the pocket edition rules. I was thinking about the designer's edition rules. Start with them and implement them in a computer, because these are the number rules are a lot smaller. The energy allocation is relatively simple to do. There's only, three weapons? And maybe, I'm thinking about the, because you're falling a web, but you have to allocate four. And that's about it. Now, of course, tractors and transporters. Those have to be allocated for. Now, there's one thing if you noticed. I'm going to do a quick search here just to make sure that I didn't miss something. Of course, they might not have called it this. Yep. One thing they didn't have, reserve power. So batteries have to be done at, you have to, basically draw the power out of the batteries at an energy allocation. And that's also where you recharge them, is energy allocation. Yep, heads need to be allocated. Everything has to be allocated. There is no reserved power. Give me this. So, again, this kind of things simplify things greatly down. So, what do you have? You have now, some people, I'm willing to bet you that if there was a computer game that implemented these rules, the simplified version of rules, there's some people that go, well, I want some of the more modern rules, which in that case could be optional, is an optional thing. That's what I was thinking of. Start with the basics. You have to pre-allocate, the impulse procedure is really simple. Move, fire. Move, fire, move, fire, move, fire. That's all you got. And even the movement itself, you don't have to decide at the time of that impulse where you move. You just click next, 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 next. And then at some point decide, okay, I'm going to fire. Boom. Heck, I don't think even when you fire, I don't think you really have to worry that much about me too firing. I don't think that even covers that. Actually, I might mention that I did not read it fully, which is weapons fire in SFB is you allocate it in secret and then announce it later. Announce it. As part of a separate segment, which it does have. What would be interesting to me would be, okay, implement just the system. Let's not implement all the rules. Let's just implement the system. Have, energy allocation form. You can obey or forego the rules. It assumes that you're doing the rules correctly. But movement, you have to pre-move your ships. and then have it so that when you're ready to fire, just go next when it comes to people. So the movement's already done. You don't do anything when it comes to movement. The only thing you're going to do is you fire. Now, yeah, because this is, we would start with the basic game. The basic game doesn't have a lot of these new toys. Suicide shuttles, wild weasels, ECM, ECCM, things that complicate matters. That's, because you think about the Federation Commander, it's, you remove all of that stuff. There is no wild weasel. There is no suicide shuttles. Actually, I think there might be. I think there's suicide shuttles. But you don't have wild weasels. You don't have the pseudo plasmas, which, of course, in the designers of this, you don't have it either. And it's not until the advanced rules that you actually have even drone options. And that, that's good. That makes it a little more of a challenge because you can't assume that the drone that a person launched, what type that is. Because I'm pretty sure in the basic ones, you don't announce what is the target and what's the type. I don't know. I have to double check it. You might have to. I know in Federation Command, you have to announce who the target is. Is known immediately. I'm not sure of the basic rules if it does the same thing. But anyway, so starting with that, I'm really curious. Implement just the basic rules. How fast would the game be? Because that's one thing. That's one experiment I really have never had, and I really would love to have with people. I actually have to have willing participants, and that is the whole idea. A pre-plotted movement. Do completely pre-plotted movement. Obviously, the problem, I have even I, who's really a pre-plotted movement fan, 32 impulse of pre-plotted movement, that kind of gets scary. That's why I'm thinking that if you go 32 impulse, you're not going to go that fast because you're going to be concerned that you're going to fly too fast and just run into something, But I think that would be a real challenge. And I truly, because how many of us have played 3 to 4 hour long games? Possible some 6, 7, 8 long, hours long, possibly more, especially if you're playing a campaign game, a fleet game. Yeah, dang. It can last you a long time. Also can be very short if you're really outgunned. Lord knows, I still remember, Galactic Conquest. Barry played this one game called Galactic Conquest. And he said, that's like probably you want to play? And I went, no, I don't want to be stuck playing one game the whole day. And what happened? That's exactly what happened. He spent, around 6 hours playing the one game. And SFB can be even more. It can be even worse. So, anyhow, that's one thing I would really like to look into, which is maybe just implementing go back to the Pocket Edition. I was going to say the Designer's Edition because some things were cleaned up some, but still stick with the basic rules. No overloads, no hets, no tactical warp tacks. Just simple. Your turn mode is your turn mode. That's one thing I didn't even see, and I'll look for it. I didn't see any mention of side slips. I didn't. There's possibly it's in there. I didn't see it because I was, in some cases, I was skimming over because whatever it was, same as before. So, anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.